the content of this program is intended for people who are blind and Brent impaired. Hello, this is Cindy Fowler from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the HGTV Gardens e-newsletter, the North Carolina State Extension Gardener e-newsletter, Better Homes and Gardens magazine, Bird and Blooms magazine, and maybe from Tips for the Lazy Gardener by Linda Tilgner. We'll start with the Extension Gardener news. Gardening at your doorstep. Right at your doorstep may be many of the answers to the social, educational, and health challenges faced by children, parents, and teachers in the United States. Children look at the details, not the vista. Bend down to their height and see what you can find at their level. Right at your doorstep may be many of the answers to the social, educational, and health challenges faced by children, parents, and teachers in the United States. Spending time outside with children in natural environments can increase physical activity, connect families with one another, and connect children with nature. However, for a variety of reasons, children today spend less time playing outdoors than any previous generation. And next, from the National Gardening Association, Gardening with Nature, featuring Charlie Nardozzi. Gardening is for the birds. If you've been reading my Gardening with Nature newsletters, you know I talked about growing a pollinator garden in June. Now I want to expand this conversation to include birds, like many butterflies, bees, and pollinators. Songbirds, in particular, have seen a dramatic decline in their numbers. The Cornell Lab of Ornithology has found that in the last 50 years, North America has lost more than 25% of its birds. That's a population decline of about 3 billion birds. As with pollinators, the factors contributing to this decline are many, such as habitat loss, use of pesticides, and pollution. However, waterfowl and specific species, such as bald eagles, have increased over that time period, mostly due to wildlife conservation efforts. So there's hope. For many birds, that hope resides with home gardeners. We don't necessarily need a large grassland, forest, or wetland to attract and sustain a healthy bird population. With millions of home gardeners working the land, we can make a difference creating habitats and food sources for birds to thrive. Here's some ways you can help. Creating a bird habitat. Creating an ecological habitat is often the first step to luring birds back into our yards. The common American landscape usually consists of a few shade trees, foundation shrubs around the house, and mostly non-lawn in between. This is not beneficial for birds. They need food, water, and nesting areas to thrive. Creating a diverse landscape with native trees, shrubs, and flowers, water, and shelter will give nesting birds a place to call home and still create a beautiful landscape to enjoy. Book author and entomologist Doug Tellamy has done research that shows growing native to the eastern part of the USA shade trees such as oak, willow, and cherry attract far more moth and butterfly species than exotic introduced trees such as ginkgo and Bradford pear. The reason moths and butterflies are important is their larvae, caterpillars, are an important protein source for baby birds. Research shows a single hatch of songbirds will require up to 500 caterpillars each day for 2 weeks to reach the fledgling stage, while an oak tree harbors more than 500 different species of caterpillars, a ginkgo tree harbors only 10. Recreating various ecosystems helps as well. Consider growing a meadow with grasses and native wildflowers to encourage nesting field birds such as sparrows. This doesn't have to be elaborate. It can simply mean not mowing as much lawn and letting wildflowers and native plants come back in out-of-the-way areas of your yard. Mowing once a year in late fall is enough to maintain the meadow. Another option is growing a small forest area filled with a diverse array of native trees and shrubs that fill the ecosystem from the forest floor to the canopy. Again, you don't need acres for this to be effective. In Japan, botanist Akira Miyaoka has introduced the concept of mini high-density forests that grow quickly, are diverse, attract birds and wildlife, and can be grown in an area as small as the size of a tennis course. Using this Miyaoka forest design, small, ecologically diverse forests are sprouting up around the globe. They make perfect homes for many nesting birds, incorporating hiding places such as evergreen shrubs and trees, brush piles, and climbing vines into the design helps birds stay safe while feeding and raising their young. Not only do birds need feed, they need water. Having a bird bath, stream, or small pond helps give birds the water they need. Keeping the pond or bird bath unfrozen in winter is critical for overwintering species such as chickadees. You can use heated bird baths that keep water ice free, even during winter in the north. Best plants for birds. While placing bird feeders in the landscape is one way to feed birds, a more important complementary idea is to grow shrubs and perennial flowers that offer berries and seeds. Native berry shrubs such as dogwood, holly, elderberry, and viburnum produce a vital food source, while introduced plant species such as Japanese honeysuckle and buckthorn may produce berries for birds. When compared to the native shrub berries, their content is different. The caloric content of native and exotic shrub berries is about the same, but the fat content of native berries can be 6% to 48% compared to 1% fat for most exotic shrubs. This means the berries offer more energy for migrating birds getting ready to take flight and overwintering birds getting ready to face the cold. Another food source is the seeds formed by the perennial and annual flowers such as echinacea, rudbeckia, coreopsis, zinnia, and cosmos. By growing heirloom varieties of these flowers, which produce viable seed, and by leaving the spent blossoms in the garden in winter, you can provide an essential food source for birds. My wife, Wendy, and I always delight in watching the goldfinches in fall working the echinacea spent blossoms we leave in the garden for the nutritious seeds. So we don't have to totally recreate our landscape to help the birds. Creating some forest or meadow areas, having water available, and growing flowers and native berry-producing shrubs will help migratory and overwintering birds survive. even if your garden space is small. If everyone in your community changes their gardening habitat a small amount for the birds, our feathered friends will be more likely to thrive during this unsettling time. About Charlie Nardozzi. Charlie Nardozzi is an award-winning, nationally recognized garden writer, speaker, radio, and television personality. He has worked for more than 30 years bringing expert gardening information to home gardeners through radio, television, talks, tours, online, and the printed page. Charlie delights in making gardening information simple, easy, fun, and accessible to everyone. He's the author of 6 books, has 3 radio shows in New England, and a TV show. He leads garden tours around the world and consults with organizations and companies about gardening programs and grow these annuals to attract pollinators. Growing flowers for bees, butterflies, and hummingbirds benefit both you and the pollinators that receive their nectar and pollen from the plants. These annuals are easy to grow and loved by our pollinator friends. Nature has many wild workers. When watching insect activity around my flowers last spring, I missed the honeybees but hoped they would come buzzing around. Gardening for honeybees. Most gardeners I know garden for birds or butterflies, but not me. I garden for honeybees and have learned a lot about honeybees and flowers in the process. Bulbs are a favorite of many gardeners because they are easy and showy. Who can resist the first snowdrops or crocuses? Honeybees like to visit the blossoms for nectar and pollen, so I'm busy adding more bulbs to my garden just for them and for me. Growing vegetables is easy when you know how. We are pleased to make available the complete collection of National Gardening Association's books of vegetables. Now from the National Gardening Association. Repeat blooming azaleas. Azaleas are familiar spring blooming plants, but since the advent of numerous re-blooming cultivars, summer is much more colorful. Repeat blooming azaleas may be white, red, pink, purple, orange, or a combination of colors. Sizing ranges from small shrubs under 3 feet to medium sizes in the 4 to 6 foot range. Encore azaleas offer the broadest selection for partial sun or sunny areas with nearly 30 varieties to choose from. For shady locations, Bloomathon azaleas excel as repeat bloomers with 4 color options. Azaleas work well in mass plantings or as individual accent or focal plants. And these 7 durable shrubs bring the color when summer brings the heat. Crepe myrtle. Lagerstromia indica is also known as the lilac of the South, but it grows well beyond the land of cotton. Hardiness zones 7 and higher will see crepe myrtles reach their full growth potential. In zone 6 and lower, they are best treated as hardy perennials. Cut them to the ground after several hard winter freezes when they are in hard dormancy to remove wood that would otherwise be killed by the cold. The roots will remain strong and healthy, resprouting new stems each spring. Crepe myrtles are also available in a wide range of sizes. If you need a small shade tree or a mound-shaped foundation plant, there is a crepe myrtle to fit your needs. While some varieties may reach in excess of 25 feet in height, others may never achieve 5 feet. There are many size options in between. As for color, the spectrum runs from white to pink, red, and purple. Hardy hydrangea paniculata is also known as hardy hydrangea because of its ability to grow in zones 3 through 8. These mostly white flowering shrubs mature at 8 to 15 feet tall and wide. The varieties are differentiated primarily by size and flower appearance. Dwarf varieties such as Little Lime and Strawberry Sundae stay smaller than 6 feet at maturity. Some of the flowering differences include colors such as the chartreuse blooms of Limelight, the white to red involving Vanilla Strawberry and Firelight, and the pink and white bicolored Pinky Winky. Use this deciduous shrub in beds and borders as a specimen, particularly when trained as a patio tree. The flowers make wonderful vase displays, fresh or dried. Rose of Sharon, Hibiscus syriacus, is a favorite of the Hibiscus genus for its hardy shrub habit and durability under a variety of conditions. Hardy in zones 5 to 9 and growing 8 to 12 feet tall, Rose of Sharon comes in a wide array of bloom color choices, including white, pink, purple, red, and multi-toned varieties. These summer bloomers perform best in full sun and work well in shrub borders or as specimen plants. The flowers attract all kinds of pollen and nectar lovers like hummingbirds, butterflies, bees, and more. Plant Rose of Sharon in moist, well-drained soil in full sun. And then, of course, there's the repeat blooming azaleas that we just did talk about. Knockout Rose. The Knockout Rose completely changed landscaping when it arrived on the scene. The heavy blue rebloomer offers brilliant cherry red blooms from spring through fall on plants that achieve a height and width of 4 to 6 feet and is hardy in zones 5 through 11. In addition to the original red Knockout, there are several shades of pink and yellow, as well as double-flowered red and pink. The Knockout roses are highly disease-resistant and rebloom with minimal maintenance beyond pruning. Use Knockout roses in all types of plant mass plantings for great effect. Butterfly Bush, Buddleia Davidiae, has been widely used to attract butterflies and other pollinators for many years. The classic purple blooming, fragrant 10-foot shrub has gradually become outpaced by other colors and improved cultivars with dwarf habits. Butterfly bushes may be found that stay under 3 feet, which work well in container plantings or as part of a perennial border. The larger types can anchor pollinator gardens, accent shrub borders, or contribute their color to naturalized areas. Butterfly bushes are hardy in zones 5 and up. Bloom colors range may be white, pink, red, purple, blue, and multi-tone. Bluebird, Caryopteris ex clandonensis, also known as bluebeard or blue mist, grows 3 to 4 feet tall and wide and is hardy in zones 5 through 9. The top growth is only consistently hardy to zones 7, but the plant regenerates readily in zones 5 and 6 if the top is winter killed. This petite beauty forms a neat mound that works well in masses at the front of the shrub burger border, as a low hedge, or in a mixed perennial bed. Bluebird blooms mid-summer through fall, attracting the attention of pollinators. The silver-gray foliage is fragrant upon contact, adding another desirable dimension. Now from 1001 Hansen. Tips for your garden. But here are some things that you're going to have to do in August. With trees and shrubs, prevent the production of palm and palmetto seedlings by pruning off immature seeds now. Use a saw to remove dead fronds flush with the trunk. Prune seed heads from crepe myrtles to encourage a few more flowers in the fall. Keep berry-producing shrubs well watered through this dry month. For your annuals, start seed for a fall transplants. Cut back tired annuals and rejuvenate with water-soluble fertilizer, weed water, and fertilizer as needed. Deadhead to promote extended flowering. Watch for signs of pests and diseases, especially spider mites. Replace spent annuals with heat-loving transplants for fall blooms. With perennials and bulbs, weed water and fertilize as needed. Fertilize summer flowering bulbs with 5-10-5 or bone meal, deadhead or cut back to promote plant vigor. Divide overgrown bulb clumps as foliage dies back. Replant before fall rains. Cut back unsightly bearded iris foliage. Watch for signs of pests and diseases. And for your roses, increase watering to twice weekly during heat and drought. Spray diluted fungicides as needed. Request new catalogs. Renew mulch as needed. At month's end, prune bushes by removing dead wood and shortening long canes by one-third for better fall bloom. Prune climbers by cutting backside shoots. And for your vegetables and herbs, plant peas. Even if it seems too hot, they won't produce until temperatures cool in the fall. Plant bush beans weekly from now until mid-September. Use floating row covers to protect plants from heat and pests. Harvest herbs at their peak, just before they begin to flower, and use or preserve as soon as possible. And your tomatoes, use a complete foliar fertilizer on new transplants to encourage vigorous growth and early production. Set up and use a low volume irrigation system on the new tomatoes. Mulch to conserve moisture. Watch for spider mites, which thrive in the heat of summer. And on your lawns, apply post-emergent herbicides to control annual weeds in Bermuda grass. Seed, sprig, or sod new Bermuda grass lawns. Maintain regular mowing and watering schedule. Assess lawn condition for possible fall renovation. Watch for signs of pests and diseases. Apply controls as needed. Monitor plants daily for water needs and pest control. Apply water-soluble fertilizer as needed for healthy vigor, usually every 2 to 4 weeks. Pinch back straggly plants and deadhead spent blooms to maintain neat appearance. Replace summer annuals and failed or diseased plants with heat-tolerant tropical foliage plants. From Tips for the Lazy Gardener by Linda Tilgner. Don't forget the flowers. Plant tiny bulbs such as snowdrops, scilla, crocus, grape hyacinth, and Cladoxa in a place they'll be noticed in early spring, but undisturbed during the summer. There's nothing worse than inadvertently digging them up as you cultivate after their foliage has disappeared and you've forgotten they were there. Instead of putting them in a flower bed, try them below light mulch under deciduous trees and shrubs. Double stakes protect garden from hose. Another gardener who has several small vegetable plots drives a stake at the corner of each bed to protect plants while he drags the hose around. Most of us move sprinklers around to get an even watering in a garden area. It takes time, and the water is rarely sped evenly. A neighbor of mine, starting a garden, set up his sprinkler and staked out exactly where it watered. Those were the boundaries of his garden. A chrysanthemum in the vegetable garden is like a canary in a coal mine. The mum wilts before other plants when water is needed, giving you early warning to start irrigating. Save your water from cooking vegetables. Let it cool. Toss out the door on the herbs or salad greens in your kitchen garden, or the flowers, if that's what grows there. In winter, use for houseplants. The secret to asparagus is to fertilize it lavishly, explains a gardener whose succulent spears are known throughout her neighborhood. Feed first in early spring at the same time you cultivate, and again when you stop harvesting. After the ground freezes, load up the bed with manure.
That's all the time we have for today. You've been listening to Out in the Garden on the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Out in the Garden is available as a podcast by visiting our website at ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, give us a call. Our telephone number is 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.